Hello and welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast, the podcast that gives real football fans a real voice on the sport that we love. My name is Jordan, your host, and this week on the pod, I'm joined by a couple of football fans, Mike, our Arsenal fan, and Ranty, our Spurs fan. Gentlemen, how are we doing?
All good, can't complain.
All good?
Yeah. It's been a while.
It's been a while, man, but we got you back on. It's been even longer for yourself, Ranty. Yeah. We thought we'd get you back on because we're going to talk Spurs on the pod today. And just mention, you've been on the pod before. You run a YouTube vlog called Footy Says. Tell us a little bit about, or remind us again, about what your channel is all about.
Yeah, so essentially Footy Says is a YouTube account that we run. We initially started on Twitter about, I'll say, in 2011, but we had to start that again for extenuated circumstances, shall we say. But we basically talk about contemporary issues in football, whether that be, I don't know, you can talk about grassroots, you could talk about your favourite club, etc. Well, the content varies. We do an FS face-off as well, mm-hmm. which basically entails two opposing fans watching their team play live and just catching their reactions. Or we have FS Uncut, which is a regular segment that we're doing at the moment, where we have a barber setting, mm-hmm. and we just get guests from up and down the country to talk about football topics that obviously they want to talk about, and that's,
yeah, I've done it.
It's a really good concept.
It was
actually
good fun.
Yeah, Jordan's been on that, so something that we've started and we're hoping we can push on.
Good, nice one. Great content there from Footy Says. This week on the pod, we're going to be talking about England and Tottenham a bit later as well. We've also got our regular Italian expert coming on, as Italian football expert coming on the pod later on as well. Before we go any further, you guys may have noticed, I wish I could take credit for the quality increase on this recording. We are basically being afforded the luxury of using the TalkSport Towers studios this week. So five starting this week.
Can hear me from Mars away.
Proper set up here, so thank you very much to the guys for having us here this week. Right, let's kick off with a couple of drive-bys, guys. There will be international football themed this week, as it is International Football Week. I'll start with you, Mike. In fact, I'm going to ask both of you both these questions. I'll start with the first question of you, Mike. At this summer's World Cup, who are you most looking forward to seeing and why? And that can apply to a particular player or a particular team.
The team I'm looking forward to watching is Croatia.
Okay.
I feel like they've got a team that a lot of people are not looking out for. But I think, obviously, the main one for me will probably be France. Mm-hmm. I just want to see how they get that squad out. Mm-hmm. I want to see their starting 11. I want to see what mentality they're going to play with, their style of play, everything. I can't wait.
And if there's one player, and just give me one that you're looking forward to seeing, it could be well known, it could be under the radar. Is there one player this summer you're thinking, I'm going to be watching, I'm going to be scouting this guy?
Harry Kane.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I want to see how he does at the top level.
On the big
stage. This for me is cements his world class status.
Okay.
If he does well, then I'll give it to him.
I tend to agree. We're going to get to Harry Kane later on. Ranty, same question to you. Is there a team or a player that you're particularly looking forward to seeing this summer?
In regards to the team, I would say France. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of hype surrounding them leading up to the tournament, and rightfully so. There's a lot of talent in their squad. However, I do think in terms of their experience, they might have a challenge or an issue there actually going all the way. But that remains to be seen, obviously. But I'm looking forward to seeing the likes of Mbappe. Mm. Pogba, obviously, is going through a very hard time at Manchester United for one reason or the other. Usman Dembele, who I think is a class act on his day. I love players who can play with both feet, and mm-hmm. he can do that.
The list is endless, ain't it?
Yeah, the list is endless. I mean, there's Griezmann as well. You can go on. There's a lot of quality there.
But France aside, is there any particular player you're thinking, that's someone I've heard good things about him, or I've been watching him for a while, that you're particularly looking forward to seeing?
I'll be so honest. I'm going with the same. It's Harry Kane.
Oh, come on, guys. Can you be a bit more negative than Kane and France?
The reason... How many
teams and players in this tournament?
I'll tell you why I'm going with Harry Kane. Because for me, Harry Kane is one of the most naturally gifted finishers in the world, period. I personally can't say I've come across a striker at Spurs who can finish like him. Maybe Defoe probably comes close to him. Mm. But I think there's been a lot of pressure surrounding Kane, and I think he's dealt with that in the last 3 years or so, mm-hmm. since he's broken through at Spurs. But a lot of people still tend to question him on the main stage. I mean, for me, he did it in the Champions League. He scored against Juventus. He's proved his worth against Real Madrid. He scored against Borussia Dortmund.
I'm going to cut you there, Ranty, because the drive-bys are a minute long. We're going to probably come back to Kane.
Yeah, that's fine.
During the England and Spurs chat later on. So we can save Kane.
Yeah, but Kane for me. Yeah.
Kane's your guy. Okay, stick with you. Are you expecting a World Cup that sees teams trying to win it by methods of Mourinho and Benitez tactics, or expecting a World Cup where teams try to win it with Pep and Klopp tactics? Do you understand what I'm trying to? What I'm asking there.
Yeah, I do to an extent. I think it's going to vary depending on the manager and the personnel of the team. Mm. Like, for instance, if we're going with Lau, he's proven himself at tournaments. I think Germany are quite effective in the way they start up their attacks, and I think they're quite organised in the way they defend as well. Mm-hmm. However, I think if you're going to compare their players as individuals to the likes of maybe France or your Spain's, then it's a different issue entirely. So for me, I think it's going to vary. I would like to say that we're going to see a lot of flair at the World Cup. I think Brazil are, for me, they're going to be dark horses, and the reason I say they're going to be...
Can you call Brazil a dark horse?
Yes, I the reason I call Brazil a dark horse is because we haven't seen the best of Brazil for me personally since 2002. That team in 2002, we're talking about Ronaldo, Kaká, Roberto Carlos, those players for me were at the top of their game, and we saw that, hence the reason they won the World Cup. But I think now they've got a new breed of players coming in. You've got the likes of Jesus, obviously you have Willian, who I think is a very underrated player. Mm-hmm. Casemiro as well is a underrated DM. Yep. I think Thiago Silva, who I would say is a really I think he's a quality defender.
Okay, same question to you. Do you think teams are going to try to win this World Cup by being defensive and countering, or do you think there's going to be a World Cup that's going to see teams on the front foot and going for it? Are we going to see a World Cup that's going to be... I don't know if it was the World Cup before last, it was really defensive and cagey.
Yeah, yeah.
And the last World Cup, to be fair, I thought was generally quiet. Most teams tended to kind of be on the front foot. What kind of World Cup are you anticipating?
I think there'll be a mixture of both, but mostly attacking teams. When I look at... I'm looking at Egypt. Mm-hmm. Egypt got quite an attacking team. You've got Belgium, you've got your France, you've got your Argentina, you've got Brazil. All of these teams have attacking players and attacking managers.
Does that mean they're going to necessarily attack?
I believe so. I'm looking at Belgium and I think they're going to attack. Mm. They're going to attack. So I'm hoping that there'll be more attacking teams. Looking at a lot of the squads, I'm hoping they're going to go for the attacking mentality, but you always got to get your teams that are going to play five at the back. Night Spartan 300 at the back.
Oh, and let's move on now. Tonight is the England as well. The kickoff's in about half an hour. England, Italy. Let's talk a little bit about England. The question I want to start off with, gentlemen, is: are England fans not real fans if they don't support the team despite years of hurt, pain, and failure? And this question's been kind of predicated off the Raheem Sterling's interview yesterday, where he's basically saying to England fans, look, come on, man, show us some love, get behind us, stop being so negative, stop being so critical. If you back us, it will help us do well. If you bring negativity, if you have scepticism, if you, you know, are criticising us before we even start, that will have an impact on our performances. I'll start with you, Ranty. Do you think fans, England fans, should be right now positive, on the front foot, supporting their team, and then waiting for England to flop and to fail? Or are you more of the mindset that they've had so many years of failure and pain, it's hard for England fans now to kind of support first before seeing something to get excited about?
To be honest, I don't think they should exceed their expectations. At the same time, I don't think they should kind of shy away from supporting their country as well. I think there has to be an element of realism as well. You look at England compared to most of the dominant countries playing in the World Cup. In theory, you don't see them winning the World Cup. So I think I do understand where Raheem Sterling's coming from to an extent. The team do need their fans to get behind them. The team do need them to support them as well. But I think with fans as well, you can support, but you can also be a realist at the same time. I'm going to be supporting two countries, my country, Nigeria, as well as England. But I think going back to England, I don't expect them to win the World Cup, but I can hope that they do well. I'm looking to see, you know, individual performances more than I am the collective performances. I'm also looking forward to seeing how Southgate sets up, judging by some of the formations that he's used in the friendlies and World Cup qualifiers. He looks like he's not afraid to try and experiment new things. So I'm down with that. I don't think fans should shy away from supporting the team, but there should be an element of realism as well.
Mike, do you think he's got a little bit of a cheek, considering what England fans have had to go through for the last, recent history, and by recent history I'm talking about the last 30, 40 years. Do you know what I mean? England fans always turn up, always travel, always back their team. Do you think it was a little bit cheeky of him to kind of suggest that the England fans aren't supporting them, or they aren't showing their team love, despite the kind of what they've had to go through for the last 20, 30 years?
No, it's the life cycle of a fan, ain't it? You've got to go through the ups, you've got to go through the downs.
There's not many ups with England fans. For him to say coming back,
what I mean? Football goes in swings and roundabouts in cycles, you know. As an Arsenal fan, I can tell you that. But, you know, look, I think I'm on the opposite to you. I'm not looking for individual performances. I'm looking for this team to perform as a team, you know, and they need to look at a team like Greece, because looking at England, they're not exactly blessed for talent right now. So they need to
learn.
I don't think so. No, I don't think there's any player in that team except Harry Kane that will walk into any other team. That's my opinion, of course.
How many squads do you think have better squads than England? So that was
starting 11.
Squads. So there's the obvious ones. France got a better squad. Belgium got a better squad.
There you go.
Brazil.
Let's keep going.
Brazil, Germany, four, Spain, Argentina, six.
Portugal.
They got a better squad than England?
I believe so.
Okay, seven. Is there an eighth team that's got a better squad than England?
Off the top of my head. When I look at that team, there's nobody that... I mean, as a defender, you'll be scared of Kane. Who else are you going to be scared of? Raheem Sterling?
You don't think this season Sterling's form suggests that he can go into this tournament?
Do you know what? I think that's what I'm saying. I think it boils down to what you were saying initially about how teams are going to set up. Because, I mean, in theory, you look at England and you think their standout player is Harry Kane because of the goal threat that he possesses. But Rashford, he's got mad speed. Sterling, he's got mad speed. Do you understand? If you have a system that is suited to the personnel and the style of play for England, I think personally, you know, teams are going to have a problem, because I don't care how good you are as a defender. I don't care how good you are as a defender. If you don't know how to deal with pace, you're in big trouble.
Yeah.
The last thing defenders want to be doing is backtracking or looking at their own goalkeeper.
And that's going off that point. I feel like this England team, before, we had players that you looked to. You had the Gerrards, you had Lampard, you had Beckham.
Yeah,
you know, players that you looked to carry the nation. You had Wayne Rooney. Whereas
they didn't. That's the point.
That's what I'm getting at. That's the problem we've had in the past.
Individuals.
Relying on these individuals. Yeah, we've got Gerrard. Gerrard will hit a 30-yard scream or something like that. This year, yeah, we've got Kane. Okay. But that team ethic is what's going to get you to progress. You know, this is the first time I'm actually seeing a team rather than individuals. I wouldn't say they're blessed for talent, like I said. You do have your Rashford. He's a potential. He's someone I would like to see at the World Cup as well. But I'm just looking for them to perform as a team together. That togetherness.
Who do you start in goal? You're a goalkeeper, Mike. If the World Cup started tomorrow, there seems to be something that they... It seems that Southgate doesn't know who he's going to start with.
You sit up there.
His chest came out there, my shoulders like, yeah, this is my time. It seems like Gareth Southgate doesn't know, but the whispers I'm hearing is that he's leaning towards Pickford.
I would.
Starting. Is that who you would start?
Jordan Pickford, yeah.
Is it an obvious decision for you, or is it he just pips Butland?
I don't think Butland is in a position to start, in a sense that at least Pickford had a bit of European football. Wasn't for long. He's experienced something outside of the Premier League. Hart has. So if I'm not picking Pickford, I'm going to go with Hart, just on the experience.
So Hart's your number two?
Yeah, just on the experience of playing outside of the Premier League.
How does that help him?
Well, Hart.
Joe Hart, yeah.
Well, it helps him over Butland because he only knows one thing.
But if that experience is a negative experience, surely Butland's an advantage. If Hart's experience, and we agree, at City aside, as a goalkeeper at the high level hasn't been positive, especially with England, is that a good thing? Because people say take Joe Hart for the experience, but if that experience is negative, is that worth bringing?
I don't see how his experience could be negative. I mean, he's
two
he's
poor tournaments. He's had two poor tournaments, Mike. Come on. He's had two
when
poor
I say,
tournaments.
When I say I can't see how the experience is negative, I mean, he's played at the highest level. He played in the Champions League. He's won a Premier League. Mm-hmm. You know, so he has something to offer. You know, his performances haven't been great, which is why I'm going with Pickford. Mm. But I don't see how his experience can be a negative, especially when you're a champion.
Okay. Ranty, is Kane being out for the next month or so, is that actually a good thing for England, do you think?
Yeah.
Why?
The reason I would say is, I think, actually, in the short term, yes, and I'm talking about from when he got injured up until now, where England play Italy tonight. It gives Southgate a chance to find out who his number two striker can be. Mm. Essentially, I watched Rashford against Holland. I didn't think he did too bad, but you can see the difference between him as a natural centre forward and Kane as a natural centre forward. And I think what helps Southgate in this position is being able to kind of play around with the formation, as we saw him do with England against Holland, and he'll probably do the same against Italy as well. Kane is not always going to be the go-to person. He hasn't said who's going to be captain, but I envisage it to be Harry Kane, for understandable reasons. But you have to look at different outlets as well. That's why I mentioned the likes of Rashford. I mentioned the likes of Sterling. Ali. I mean, Ali's probably, for me, had his worst season as a Spurs player, but he's contributed to the team still.
His worst season hasn't been that bad.
It hasn't been as bad as people have made out, do you understand? And there's been a lot of bad things said about him, performance-wise. But yeah, you have to look at a good manager knows how to deal with injuries, knows how to maximise his squad, knows how to get the best out of his squad. Southgate's going to have to learn to do that. And I do think that the potential is there to do that. I'm not just talking about the likes of the players that I've mentioned, but you've got Jamie Vardy as well. Jamie Vardy's a Premier League winner. So there's options for them. I do think they can cope. And I don't think it's an added pressure on Southgate, because no one's really expecting much
anything,
from England.
Yeah. Right, I'm going to come back to Southgate in particular on that point. Yeah. But just on going back to Kane, Mike, the reason why I was asking Ranty if it actually is a good thing, because the narrative seems to be that it's a good thing for England because he'll get time, he'll get 6 weeks off where he can recuperate and he can go into the World Cup hard. And I get that logic. Mm. The reason why I'm not sure it's a good thing is because, okay, while he'll get rest, he'll lose momentum. Mm. And I think that the momentum that he would have got going into the World Cup with Spurs is more important than a month off.
Kane doesn't lose momentum.
I'm just about to say, do you know what? This lad has had how many injuries, and he's come back firing every single time.
That's what scares me about Kane.
When he's been out for Spurs, it has taken him two or three weeks before he starts banging again.
I think there's been once.
I can't recall a time. I think
it was last season.
He goes through that phase where he doesn't score in August. I know that. I accept that. It gives everyone a head start, including Salah. We'll see. But yeah, Kane has this, he has such a winner's mentality, and that's what scares me about Kane. being a Spurs fan, because I feel like if we can't keep up with him, he's going to go anyways. But going back to the England point, Kane has this mentality whereby he wants to be as good as he was in the last game. Do you understand? Mm. He always wants to keep on improving from the last game. I remember when he had his breakthrough season and he scored that amount of goals. The papers were saying, "Oh, the, you know, defenders know what he's about now. They're gonna start double marking him, etc." Yeah. Mate, next season he was a top goal scorer.
But to be fair, I mean, people say, to be fair, at the time it was a valid response, because a lot of men come in and bang and they go missing.
It was a valid response.
It looks silly in hindsight.
It was a valid response, but it was reflective of what we've seen before. We've seen players who, you know, they have this one season where they're extraordinary, and the next season they go missing. I think with Kane, he takes a liking to that sort of criticism. He's not stupid. He's a young boy. He's on social media. He sees what the media are saying about him. He always wants to improve. He's not one of those players who kind of just sits back and says, "Oh, you know what? I am the best." Even as many people think he is the best, he'll go out there and say, you know, have that mentality by where he wants to be the best continuously. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay. So I don't think it will affect him by any means.
Mike, if Jack Wilshere is 80% fit, does he have to go?
I knew he was coming.
If he's 80% fit,
with how Southgate wants to play, I think he has to go.
Regardless,
80% fit, yeah, I think he has to go. He's one of them players that he passes through the lines. He could look up and find a pass. Looking at Henderson and Dyer, you know, that it scares me going into the World Cup with that. It genuinely scares me. So I feel like if he can, and Cook as well, I'm hoping Cook starts tonight and he can go
like
in there and do a job. But Wilshere is the one player that England have that is different, you know.
But here's my thing, Mike. So at the last of the Euros,
I know you don't like.
No. But the Euros, I said the same thing. I was like, I think Wilshere has to go, even if he's not 100% fit, simply because no one else in the squad can do what he does, and what he does is so integral to trying to score goals. So my problem is that in previous World Cups, in previous tournaments, we've hung our hat on this one player. Even if he's not fully fit, and it's got us nowhere. Now, if Lionel Messi is 80% fit, you take Lionel Messi. If Ronaldo's 80% fit, you take Ronaldo. Jack Wilshere's not Messi. So rather than focus on this one player, going back to your own point about being a team,
doesn't
go against
you. I get that. The only reason I say that is because that previous tournament you're talking about, remember, he was injured
all season, whole
season, and then he's come back and it's like, yeah, he has to go. This season, you've seen he's had football under his belt. It's unfortunate he got injured for these two games, but you can see what he's doing at Arsenal, and he's been one of our better players.
It's not difficult, mate.
Dare I say it? But you know,
but he can't stay fit, Mike. If Southgate brings him and in trade, it's not even in games now. It's in training, he's breaking down.
For me, it's worth it. I'll take that. You know, you always get like two gambles with the World Cup squad. I'll take a gamble on Jack Wilshere, definitely.
Would you take him if he's not fully fit?
I agree. Because what else do we have?
When you bring a player that's not as good, but it's going to play.
Livermore, I think.
what England lack the most right now is creativity. Mm. And I think if you take away their front line, there's not much happening behind them, bar Ali maybe. And what Wilshere on his day tends to deliver is...
On his day.
Great creativity.
There's not a lot of days.
There's not a lot of days, but...
He's had a lot of days.
You're saying there's not a lot of days, but I think what you have to take into consideration is that if you compare him to what we have at England right now,
that's it.
He stands out.
But you made the point earlier on, or someone made the point earlier on about Southgate will be tested and have to be malleable and change things and, you know, deal with things during the tournament.
100%.
If you don't take Jack Wilshere, you have to find another way of playing. It might mean being boring and putting three in the middle and being hard to beat and nicking a goal.
But those players at the same time need to be prepared and ready. In order to find the front three, you need players that can supply the front three. Mm. Do you understand? And I think Jack Wilshere's, you know, he's one of very few players, if not the only player in the England squad who can run with the ball. with confidence, make a progressive pass with confidence. You know, he can also play off the ball as well. I think he, I've seen a lot of times this season where he's working hard off the ball.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's something that Wenger's kind of tried to drill into him, given the current circumstance at Arsenal. You need a player who's going to play with their heart as well as their quality. But England need that. And I think, for me personally, if we're going to play two in the middle, I would probably, or three in the middle, I'll probably go, I mean, Jack Wilshere definitely makes that team for me.
Mm-hmm.
You can decide on who you want to hold or who you want to, you know, you. Be the boxer match guy. There's not many options, you understand? I mean, you can say Eric Dier, but me personally, I still think he's been good for Spurs, don't get me wrong, but I still think he takes a lot of time to make a decision on the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't afford to do that as a midfield player. Mm-hmm. Livermore, nothing needs to be said about that. Lewis Cook, I've seen him for Bournemouth. He looks a decent player. Would I throw him in? I don't know if he needs that added pressure. I don't know. Maybe you want to play Ali deep or along Wilshere and then have a holding midfielder in Henderson. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, just on the Wilshere thing, Ranty, as well, I wouldn't take him if he's not fully fit come selection pre World Cup. I don't think he'll stay fit during the World Cup. I just don't. I think he'll break down. I foresee a media circus around Wilshere not being able to be fit. And I think to myself, would Germany leave out a creative player that wasn't 100% fit? Would France? I think those big managers at big nations, I think they leave out that player. If you can't prove your fitness and buy into what we're trying to do, and I can't rely on you, I'm not taking
you. Have to look at the options that France have, and you have to look at the options that Germany have as well.
True.
I think, again, Wilshere is... He's a very unique player,
mm-hmm.
As much as that hurts me to say as a Spurs fan. He's a very unique player, but like you said, he's very brittle. But I think it's a risk worth taking. If he's 80% fit, like we did with David Beckham, obviously he doesn't come as David Beckham, Beckham came back from a broken metatarsal, didn't he?
Yeah.
Why not take a risk with Jack Wilshere?
Because that reason.
England have nothing to lose,
George,
though.
You see, my problem is that link from midfield to attack. When I was watching the Netherlands game, it's so disjointed.
Mm.
You just need someone to just... If you look at it as lines, and the midfield there and the attack is there, obviously, listeners can't see what I'm doing. But you've got your midfield and you've got your attack. You need someone to break from the midfield to link that gap. And we don't have anyone that
that for me, you're going to laugh at
Henderson and Dier are back here.
You're going to laugh at me. And that for me, the guy that was doing that a year ago, he's falling off now because of injury. That guy was Lallana. For England, he played really well. Yeah. He was that link guy.
Yeah.
I liked him. I know the last year's not been great for him, and I think he's on a borderline now, but he was meant to be that guy.
Yeah.
I know that he's not around. But Mike, what's success for England? What for you is a successful campaign? And I don't just mean in terms of, you know, more than get out of the group.
Sound silly by saying win it.
No. I want you to answer what you want to, you know.
Ain't that success?
That's the definition of success. Okay. I'll rephrase it.
Thank you.
What is success for England?
Okay. For me, success for England will be coming out of that tournament with Southgate knowing what his style of play is.
Mm-hmm.
And effectively imprinting that in the World Cup,
okay.
So that people know, okay, this is how England play. In terms of a stage, I'll call it the quarterfinals.
If they get knocked out like they did against Iceland in the Euros, at the knockout stages, that is a failed campaign.
You see, my problem with the Euros was that, again, no style of play, and nobody knew what they were doing. Hutchinson was just throwing people in.
So if there's a style of play, but they get knocked out in the knockouts, is that success for you?
As in if they progress to the groups, they through the group stage.
Get out of the groups and they get knocked out in the first knockout. But all four games, there was a style of play and you as Mike watching them be like, okay, I see what Southgate was doing there.
Is that a successful campaign? Me personally, I'd be happy with that in the sense that, you know what, now we can go away, we can focus on and hone our skills.
Okay.
Whereas if we get to the quarterfinals and it's like...
What are we doing?
It's like, get a win here, get a loss. Yeah, get a loss there and this, that and the other. You know, I'm not interested in that. I'd stay away from that. This is why I want Southgate to be given a chance, a stint.
Yeah.
So we can build something.
Ranti, what for you is a successful campaign for England?
I'm expecting them to do well in the group stages. And then...
As in, get out.
Get out. Yeah,
as in, top it.
Of course, top it. Yeah, I guess it depends who they get in the knockout stages. Because I mean, they could get, I don't know, they could get Spain.
I think I could be, I'll double check this after. But I think it could be Germany or Brazil.
Fine. Okay.
I don't quote me on that, but I'm sure I heard that they will take the group win or something from Germany or Brazil's groups, and they are both likely to top their groups. If England finish second.
Let's just say, for argument's sake, it's either one of those teams. Can you be mad if England go out? I don't think so. But I mean, I guess you have to consider the context of the game as well. I mean, I thought England got robbed against Germany in 2010. Lampard.
They were getting battered before that.
Don't get me wrong. Hold on. Lampard scores that goal that changes the context of the game completely.
Because then England have most likely
momentum then.
That goal was just before half time, as I remember. They go in at 2-2, and the likelihood is that they come out.
What was the score in the end? No, they got battered. Was it 4-1?
Yeah, 4-5-1.
4-5-1. England scored that goal.
It was 4-1.
Was it 4-1? Yeah. 4-1. England scored that goal. I think Germany were 1-0 up. Lampard scores that goal. Ref gives it. It's 1-1. Mm. The momentum's with England.
Okay.
You understand? I think, again, it boils down to the context of the game. But, I mean, in general, I think, as Mike said, if Southgate knows a system that he wants to play with, and it works potentially, and Southgate can keep his job up until the Euros, I think personally he's done a good job, but he has to get out of those group stages.
Okay, let's move on now, guys. I want to talk about Spurs. Let's chat about your club, Ranty. We've not done Spurs for a few weeks. I want to ask the question. Actually, I'm going to start with Mike. I'm going to start with Mike on this one.
Me last on it.
Are the fans failing the club? And what I mean by that question is, when I speak to a lot of Spurs fans, Mike, and I talk to them about what's happening this season under Pochettino, a lot of them seem really excited and Poch can do no wrong. And the minute you bring up but you haven't won a trophy yet, they get really defensive and they get really kind of like, yeah, but it's better than it was 10 years ago under, who was the manager you had that was really dry? He won the League Cup with you guys.
Ramos.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he wasn't there during the Ramos days and da-da-da-da-da. And it just seems to me that the fans, by not demanding a trophy from their manager, are almost kind of the problem. Or do you feel that the progression that he's making with this club is enough, even without a trophy?
In terms of league position, obviously he's done brilliant. I'll give him that. Over the last 10 years, I was looking at the league positions of Tottenham. You had the 8th, 6th, 5th, then you get the 4th, then back to 5th, back to 6th, then you get a 4th. And, you know, in and out, Champions League, so on and so forth. But what he's come in and done is offered stability. He's got a solid, I'd like to call it a very good side. And he's got them into the Champions League consistently. As I was saying to him before you even came in, that my only criticism is he hasn't won a trophy. And it doesn't seem to me like he's taking the cup seriously. He should go out and try and win the Carabao Cup. He should go out and try and win the FA Cup. He's looking like he's trying to win it this year anyway. But as a fan, I would be expecting that. At least take the cup seriously. If I see you're taking the cup seriously and we're getting knocked out by, I don't know, maybe a team that's playing better than us, like Man City, I understand.
Could that not counter your earlier point, though? Maybe they're doing so well in the league because he's just mugging off the cups.
But the thing is, when I say they're doing well in the league, it's relative to what they've been doing before. In terms of doing well in the league is challenging. You know, they've done that once, fair enough. But even that challenge, I wouldn't necessarily call it a challenge. I would say it was Chelsea's from a long time ago, but they pushed them. But if you're challenging in the league, that's different. I'm just saying they've done well relative to where they've been previously. But as a fan, you know, I understand he's offered stability. I can see he's a brilliant manager. I can see that, you know, he's taken us in the right direction. But the next step, there's always a next step as a manager. The next step is to win a trophy. The next step is to bring in big players, see how you manage those big players. And for me, that's where he's lacking at the moment.
Ranty, do you agree that he's on par round about where he should be? and there needs to be a trophy, or as he speaks about a lot himself, he talks about the process, and what he enjoys the most is actually the, he says the trophy isn't the be all and end all. What is important to him is the journey, it's the progression, it's the growth, and the trophy is the cherry on top. As a Spurs fan, do you agree with that, or do you feel that Spurs fans should be demanding, with this squad and with this momentum, they should be demanding a little bit more, i.e. a trophy?
I mean, you can approach this argument in a number of ways. For me personally, I want a trophy. Mm-hmm. I want Spurs to win a trophy, mm-hmm. because this narrative is just spewed time and time after time after time after time after time. And you find a lot of the people that do say it, it's either they don't understand how far Spurs have progressed from when they were a mid-table club, or, you know, it's basically a notion that, you know, in order to be a successful team, you have to win a trophy. And I agree with that. You have to win trophies. You need to be able to back up your performances with silverware. However, you have to look at Pochettino's background as well. Espanyol, Southampton, mm-hmm. he was renowned for developing clubs and improving clubs. Mm-hmm. He was brought to Spurs at a time where Spurs were under so much turmoil. Mm-hmm. We had Sherwood at the time, I believe, and Spurs were literally like, we were an embarrassment, to mm-hmm. be fair. He's come in and he's built what looks to be a solid foundation at the club. The only reason people are talking about Spurs having to win trophies because of the amount of progress that we've made in the last few years.
So you think you're almost ahead of schedule?
I think, like I was telling Mike before, I feel like he has punched above his weight, mm-hmm. to an extent, but that's credit to him. Mm-hmm. That's credit to him and what he's done with the team. You have to remember the amount of players that he's taken out, the amount of bad apples he took out of the team, and the development he's made, and the progress that he's made with the players that he's brought in as well. Mm-hmm. I think what Poch needs to do now is definitely look to win a trophy, whether that be an FA Cup or a Carabao Cup, just to, you know, just kind of like ease attention and give the players that we have currently a feel of what it is like to win. But at the same time, to say that he's not a manager who doesn't care about it, I think that's a bit short-sighted, because you have to look at when he's come in. We've made the Carling Cup, when it was called the Carling Cup, we made that the final in the first season. We got knocked out by Chelsea. We made the FA Cup semi-finals twice. He's been there for four years. Mm. We got knocked out by Chelsea. We're most likely going to get knocked out by Manchester United, if I'm being honest. Mm. If we beat Man United, I'll be over the moon, but I doubt
it. Why did he know they'll knock you out?
Mourinho doesn't play about on these days, man. Yeah, he don't play about with that. He's got the experience. He knows what it takes to.
But sorry to cut you there, Ranty, but this is my problem. This kind of goes back to the essence of my question.
Yeah.
Should Spurs fans forget Mourinho? Should Spurs fans be saying to Pochettino, with that team and with the growth and the development that we've had over the last 2 or 3 years, United aren't in a great place. They're not in poor form. They're not in a great place. We expect you to beat them.
Okay.
We want a trophy. Go and beat Mourinho.
Yeah. No. It's a mentality. Rather than, no, I agree.
It's Mourinho.
No. I agree. I'm coming at it from a pessimistic sort of angle, and the only reason is because I've been a Spurs fan for a long time. But if you look at Pochettino's record against Mourinho, it's okay, but it's not that great. Mind you, we did beat them this season, and you're right. We do have the team to beat Manchester United, but then it goes down to the mentality of. The manager and that transitioning down to the team on the day as well.
Does that start with the fans though? Does the mentality of the fans being pessimist, as you say, does that transmit to the manager and he feels like, well, the fans are pessimistic, so I've kind of got a blight here? Whereas the fans were demanding a trophy this year, he would be feeling the heat.
I don't think so.
And raise his game now?
I don't think so, because since he's been there, we've improved time after time after time. Spurs are a team that were notorious for finishing outside of the top four.
If he finished fourth or top four and no cup, is that a successful season?
It's a decent season. I wouldn't call it a successful season. Okay. I'll call it a decent season. If we finish top four and win the FA Cup, I'll call it a successful season, given the circumstances, being at Wembley. Again, going back to the point, I know you say you've come across a lot of Spurs fans who say that, you know, they're content with where
we're at. I'm not making them up. There's a lot of ones that just say like, yeah, which is great, these are the good times.
I'll give you my Twitter timeline. I'll let you log into my Twitter account. You'll see Spurs fans just asking about trophy time after time after time. And it's frustration, but at the same time, I do see where Poch is coming from, because if you compare us to the top six, because that's what you have to do in essence, you have to compare us to the top six, our wage bill was probably the lowest. You understand what I'm saying? And this is what I'm talking about, Pochettino punching above his weight. You're basically asking him to go out there and win the Premier League on the wage bill that we're at with the players that we have. We're not talking about getting millions.
But I'm not sure. I'll go back to Mike's point. I think put a League Cup in the cabinet. Put an FA Cup in the cabinet. We're not saying win the Premier League.
No, that's fine. That's fine. But that's what it all boils down to. That's what we're all trying to work towards. Do you understand what I'm saying? If you're going to call us a top six side, you need to do... Well, if you're going to call us a top side, you need to do what top sides do. Do you understand what I'm saying? And if you're going to compete at that level, it's most likely you're going to come against one of those sides anyway. Do you understand what I'm saying? And this is what I'm saying, dealing with the context of the matter, because... Had we got Southampton, I would have been happy with that, and I would have said going into the if we beat Southampton, going into the final, anything can happen.
Okay,
we have to go with the same mentality with Manchester United as well, I guess. But I wouldn't blame. I wouldn't say that I'm frustrated with Pochettino. But I would say from a Spurs perspective, from a personal point of view, I would love to win the trophy.
Mike, do you get the impression that Alderweireld's been phased out?
Does it feel like the impression, or is that that's what
was that's happening?
What's happening?
He's playing tonight.
Is he playing tonight?
Yeah, he's starting.
Okay, that's interesting. Do you think he'll be at Spurs next year?
I don't think so.
No.
Is his buyout clause activated? Is it this season?
No. If we extend it for another year, next year, we trigger his buyout clause, which is $25 million.
So next season a team could get him for 25
only if we trigger the buyout. If we don't, that's why we're trying to sell him now, because otherwise he'll go in a free.
If United come in for him, I see him going.
You think he'll go?
Yeah, and I think that's probably the perfect club for him, United, because they're missing that ball playing centre back, and he's probably the best in the world if you like at it.
You know what, I would say I don't know if you've seen Vertonghen on the ball. I'm not saying I love.
So me and you I've chatted about Vertonghen this season, and I've always been of the mindset that I think Alderweireld makes Vertonghen look good.
Yeah,
Vertonghen plays his best football next to Alderweireld, and you weren't having it earlier season.
No.
And I'm gonna be fair, because I'm a fair guy.
Yeah,
Vertonghen's been very very good this year, and Alderweireld's hardly been there.
Yeah,
so I'm gonna kind of backtrack on that because. Vertonghen has put in some good performances, but I stand by previously I think Vertonghen without Alderweireld looked vulnerable, and when he was next to Alderweireld he looked brilliant, but this year he's definitely stepped up and definitely shown that he can be the guy.
There's no dispute in the fact that Toby Alderweireld and Jan Vertonghen have 100% chemistry. I don't care what anyone says. That balance. Spurs didn't have the joint best defence in the league by mistake last season with Man United. We had Rose, a fit Danny Rose on the left. We had Walker on the right, and then we had Alderweireld and Vertonghen.
And obviously, Hugo, of course.
And Hugo as well. I like Hugo. But you know my only criticism of him. Why does he go to the ground so early?
He's a madman.
He makes the mind up for the striker. And that's what amazes
me. Sometimes it's anticipation. Sometimes it looks bad.
Sometimes
it
works.
Yeah,
sometimes
it looks bad when it doesn't work, but when it does work, you
Dybala,
see coming.
Dybala, he done it against. I remember he done it against Mkhitaryan. But anyways, back to my point about Toby Alderweireld and Vertonghen. I think in terms of ball playing centre backs, I don't think that Alderweireld is better than Vertonghen. I think Vertonghen is comfortable running with the ball. I think
that's because he used to be a left back, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, but Alderweireld played right back at Atletico as well. But I think with Alderweireld you'll see that he's a lot more comfortable in possession when he doesn't have to move too much.
Okay,
so he can handle, he's composed under pressure. But if it means coming out of defence with the ball, I would have Jan Vertonghen over Toby Alderweireld.
If you don't mind, when you look at the his passing as well, his passing range,
it's quality,
that's why I call him the best in the world, because it's quality. It's not only about him bringing out the ball as well. It's vision to see that pass.
No,
that
definitely
is definitely something else.
So. No, I agree. I agree. I think his style of playing the ball varies from Vertonghen, and they complement each other so well.
It's true.
Because with Vertonghen, like I said, he's good with the ball when he's running with it, and he can play those low ground passes to players as well. Yeah, if you want to call it that. Whereas with Toby Alderweireld, he can play the diagonal, and most of the time, well, the first season he was with us, he was excellent at finding Dele Alli. Second season he was okay. Obviously, whatever's going on this season is going on, but that's more to do with a
just finally on Spurs, mental state. Mike, is the fact that Alderweireld is not in the team and hasn't been for a while for whatever reasons, but yet Spurs still seem to be functioning quite well, especially defensively. Is that a sign of how good Pochettino is, in that he can pretty much let go of the best centre back in the league, if not one of the top two or top three? And he doesn't seem fazed by it. He's not panicking. He's not scrambling around to try and keep this guy. He's confident with Sanchez, who he brought in in the summer, that he can still make Spurs a strong force, even without arguably the best centre back. Does that show how good he is?
Yeah, definitely.
And Danny Rose as well. A year ago, you would never think Danny Rose in Spurs team would supposed to be the same. He's letting these big boys go, and they're still doing their thing.
You always hear me bang on about it, about that whole ethos thing, that when you have a manager that knows how he wants to play, and this is what I want from Southgate, when you have an idea in your head and you know how you want to play,
it doesn't matter who's there.
You can take out whoever you want, bring someone else in, because everybody knows how we play. You look at that Tottenham team, and Wanyama, Dembele, Dier, you've got Vertonghen. You can bring in anyone, and they all know how we play. So it's just easy to bring someone in and say, yeah, all right, this is what you got to do. Although Sanchez has been brilliant. I really like him. I even liked him at Ajax. I really think he's a brilliant defender. But they've not missed him, and that's all down to Posh.
Okay, right, now I want to bring in top football journalist from the Mirror and broadcaster and friend of the show. I like saying that, friend of the show, and people say that, friend of the show, friend of the pod. Darren Lewis. Darren, what are you saying, man? What's happening?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. We're all good, sir. I know you're en route to the England-Italy game at Wembley tonight. I want to talk a little bit about the game in a minute. But before we get into England, I want to get your reaction to Raheem Sterling's comments yesterday, where he spoke about the fact that he wants the fans to kind of come together and just get behind the team. Come and support us. Come and back us. I think the phrase he even came up with was, show us a little bit of love. There's been a bit of a backlash towards those comments from a lot of fans that I've heard from today and spoken to myself for those comments. Do you have a little bit of sympathy for Raheem Sterling, in that you can't expect people to do well if they're not fully supported, and as fans, that's our job? Or do you take the view that fans basically are hardened to failure, hurt and disappointment, and they're saying, well, listen, mate, you get on with your job on the pitch, and after disappointing us for so many years, we'll decide if we want to back you or not. What side of the fence do you sit on?
Well, I have a bit of sympathy for Raheem Sterling as an individual, because I think he's been unfairly made a scapegoat for many, many bad England performances. And I think that's based on agendas which aren't necessarily related to football. But I think as far as the England team are concerned, I make you right in so much as I have sympathy for the fans that have backed England time and again through one failure. We have been specialists in failure, haven't we? We've gone to World Cups, gone to European Championship, big talk, big fanfare, decent qualifying campaign, and then basically come home time and again with our tails between our legs. So from that point of view, I can understand why fans aren't really that bothered by any England player saying, you've got to show us more love. England fans have shown the country so much love time and again. I remember seeing fans, pundits, friends of my own saying, that's it, I'm done with England. After the World Cup in 2010, when we were shocking and people still turned up in their numbers at Wembley to support them in subsequent friendlies and qualifiers. So I think that the England team, they do look promising. They do have ability. We know that individual players have been impressing for their club sides in the Premier League so far this season, and they've all got youth on their side. It's a new regime, a different coach. There is promise there, absolutely. But you can't start telling England fans they've got to do more when they've done more than enough over the years.
I know that you're one of these fans that you believe that all this negativity around, you know, Gareth Southgate and his tactics and his demeanour and him not being the right guy for the job. I know that, having listened to you, you're of the mindset that what's the point in being negative? What's the point in going into a tournament disappointed and angry before we even kicked a ball? Do you stand by that? That you think we should get behind the team, you know, and it's a new slate. Let's treat the team as if they're gonna do well. You know, how can we expect them to do well if they've kind of not got the support of the nation behind them?
Yeah, I mean, it is an interesting question because you know, I've spoken obviously about the heart. We have had our hearts broken many times by the national side. So lots of people are sensitive. Lots of people are apprehensive about the national team. Lots of people don't want to be sucked in by any more false storms. So it is a good point to make. That said, as I said in my previous answer, there are still reasons to be cheerful about the England team going forward because we do have the quality. And since Raheem Sterling has been booed, has been vilified, he's had a new manager who's kind of shown us all that there is a player there. If you deploy him in the right way, if you give him the right kind of confidence, if you get behind the team, there are other individuals. I remember John Stones getting hammered for trying to be the player that Pep Guardiola has seen he can be, dominant in at central defence, playing the ball out, bringing the ball out with confidence. You look all around the England team, Harry Kane scoring goals, effectively retiring Wayne Rooney, Dele Alli stepping up from the plate. What a meteoric rise he has had, even if people don't believe he's been at his best so far this season. We've got players in that team. I remember when Kyle Walker went to Manchester City and everyone said, oh, he's not worth the money. And now he's on course to help Manchester City win the title by a canter. And he's in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. And he has also got a League Cup medal under his belt. So we've got the quality in that side. Now we just need to see it work. And I think there were signs against Holland the other night that it can work because they played with a bit of confidence, passed the ball around nice. I'm not looking for the earth straight away. And I know a lot of people have been unimpressed by Holland, but then you look at what they did against Portugal away from home. 3 goals they scored against Portugal. And you realise, actually, they are not as bad as some people make out.
What are you looking for tonight, Darren? What's the one thing in this game tonight that you want to see from this team? Because do you want to see a skeleton of what Southgate is going to start with on game one of the World Cup? Do you still want to see some players that haven't had a chance to show what they can do? Or is it maybe a little bit too late now to be experimenting? Should he be now bedding in to somewhat of the team that he wants to start with come game one of the World Cup? This game tonight, what do you want from it?
Progress. If you're asking me for one word, I'd say progress, because they looked good on Friday. And I think in any friendly game, you want to see signs that the team are going in the right direction, regardless of who slots in. And if you look at, for example, Tottenham, there have been a number of key players that Mauricio Pochettino has been without this season. But he's slotted other players in, and they have continued their momentum. I think about Ben Davies for Danny Rose. I think about Sanchez for Toby Alderweireld. I think about Son Heung-min for Harry Kane. There are players who come in and know their job and keep that bandwagon rolling. And I think that's what I want to see for England. Players who come in, know their jobs, and don't really change the way we either A, approach the game, or B, actually play on the night. I do think we've got the quality. I'm not one of these people who are desperate to keep looking at the negatives. And I know after so many years, there are lots of people with some justification who do want to do that, who do want to say, oh, well, Holland, they're not all that, or we haven't got the players, or a fit Jack Wilshere was, you know, we need a fit this player or a fit that player, and lay it all at the feet of one player. All myths. I just want to see the team as a whole playing with confidence and showing that they can express themselves. And if we see that, maybe we could have a good night.
And just finally on England, I mean, this might be interlinked with your progress answer just then. What for you is success at the World Cup? Is it getting out of the group? Is it good football? Is it the youngsters being given a chance ahead of the next couple of tournaments? Is it last eight? What for you, come the end of the World Cup, would be like, right, that was a successful campaign because of X?
Do you know, I would go with, if we go to the World Cup and play well, express ourselves, have some good victories and make progress, I wouldn't be that unhappy if we went out in the quarters. If we went there and we could say we really enjoyed the ride, we played some good games, we scored some good goals, and we showed that we've got the progress. You know, we've made the progress to come from where we've come from. Because, listen, we're not going into the World Cup as a team that have regularly made semi-finals or finals. We've gone to... we're going into the World Cup as a country that has been, time and again, failures. We've failed to impress with our football. We've failed to score goals. We've failed to dominate small, so-called smaller nations. So let's not kid ourselves that if we were to go out in a semi... There is an arrogance about it. If we go out in a semi-final or a final, it's a failure. Why? What have we done over the last 20 years to suggest that, you know, anything less than the final is a failure? We've got good players, but we've had to rebuild. And I think that if we show the signs that we are going in the right direction, that we can compete, then yes, but there isn't really anything to suggest that we should do better than, say, Germany, than, say... Spain, you look at the Brazil side. Well, actually, you probably don't want to look at the Brazil side, otherwise you might have some nightmares. But, you know, I think if we look as though we've made progress, that'll be good enough for me.
And just while I've got you, Darren, I know you cover Spurs, and this weekend it's Spurs-Chelsea, big game in the battle for top four. How do Spurs view a season if they get fourth but no cup? Is that a successful season for Spurs if they don't win the FA Cup, but they get fourth again, or top four again?
Absolutely. I think as far as Spurs are concerned, absolutely, because if they finish top four, they're into the Champions League yet again. They can start to talk about themselves as a club, as a Champions League club. It's always harder when you're not in the top four to kind of stave off all that talk about losing your best players, because they do want to continue playing Champions League football and they might consider doing that elsewhere. But if they are still in the big competition, the one that the big players want to play in, then I think they'll say this has been a very satisfactory season, particularly when you consider they're going into a new stadium next year. They want Champions League football to take there too. And also when you consider that lots of people thought that they would come unstuck at Wembley, when in fact they've made the stadium their own over the past 9 months. So, yeah, I think even if they were not to win the FA Cup, they would regard the season as a success if they were to finish yet again ahead of their rivals, obviously down the Seven Sisters Road. If they were to finish...
Why you got to always bring us into this? Why have you always got to take a shot and drag my team into this? I don't understand why you have to do that. Just talk about Spurs. They're doing all right. You've always got to drag Arsenal into this.
I'm not a Spurs fan, but I know it matters to Spurs fans. And I know Arsenal fans want to play it down when they played it up every year with their St. Totteringham's Day. But now that they're obviously now finishing in front, it doesn't matter so much. I think as far as Spurs fans are concerned, it does matter. And they are starting to enjoy it. And the shoe is now on the other foot. Particularly when your manager doesn't appear to be going anywhere anytime soon. I think for Spurs, if they don't win the FA Cup, but they're finishing the top four ahead of their friends, then wow, that'll be a very good season.
On that note, Darren, thanks for coming on the FFP, man. Cheers for your time.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you, John.
Okay, so let's have a little bit of an Italian roundup now. And to do so, I'm going to bring in our Italian football expert, Gabriele Fasan. Gabriele, ciao, come stai?
Hi, everybody. Fine, thanks. You?
I'm very good, sir. Very good. Thanks for coming back on the Football Fans Podcast, man.
Thank you.
So the last time we had you on the podcast a couple of weeks back, I didn't get a chance to talk to you or ask you about the Napoli manager, Sarri. And I've heard some really good things about Sarri at Napoli. At the start of the season, we were hearing that the football that Napoli was playing was possibly better than the football Manchester City were even playing. And it was really exciting attacking football. For those of our English fans that don't know anything about Sarri, tell us a little bit about him and the kind of football his teams play.
Sarri is a very good coach for me. He came to light maybe too late because he's 59 years old and emerged with Empoli and 2 years ago. With an attacking football that he plays 4-3-3, he's a coach that doesn't change very frequent his team, and this is, in my opinion, a very good thing, but it's a limit because in the modern football is very high to play this way because players are tied very 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 frequently, and for example, you know. The Mertens, Belgian footballer, the Belgian player, said in the national team that he's very very relaxed in spite of Napoli despite of Napoli training. For example, Sarri is a coach that trained the squad for 15 days, 20 days in the summer. It's different from the others because, for example, he literally he hates the worldwide tournaments in the friendly tournée. And he concentrated his work in 20 or 30 days in summer. It's very, very strange for our football, but is an old way to train the squad.
It sounds like he's a very intense, demanding manager. Is there another manager, past or present, who you can compare him to? Is there a manager that you think his style, his management style, his teams, that you, who would you compare him to the most of any manager that's currently working or in the past?
I don't know. In Italy, we had for a lot of years Zeman. You know, the Czech coach. I think for the tactic, I think it's similar because 4-3-3. But Sarri is maybe more modern than Zeman because Zeman was like a revolution for our football. Arrigo Sacchi, but I think in Italy in the recent past we compared Sarri to Guardiola in the sense that Napoli is maybe the squad the team that play the best football in Italy, but okay. I think it's not so similar to Guardiola.
Okay, now I'm with you. And how do you think that he would do in the Premier League? Because he's been loosely linked with Tottenham. if they were to lose Pochettino. I read yesterday that, you know, he has a release clause, Sarri, in his contract. And if Spurs were to lose Pochettino this summer, they are keeping one eye on Sarri. How would he do in the Premier League? Because that intense style that you say he has as a manager, a lot of managers in the Premier League struggle to keep on for more than 2 years because the Premier League is so demanding physically. Do you think he would do well in the Premier League?
I don't know. I think it could be interesting because Sarri is a very good coach if you let him work in his methods. And it depends on, I think, on the chairman. De Laurentiis is the boss in Napoli. And Sarri asked him a lot of particular methods, like, for example, to avoid the tournée, international tournée. That in our Serie A is more important for a team. It's important for a team to participate this tournée for an economic plan. And I think Sarri should be a crack in Premier League because maybe he's a revolutionary coach like Guardiola, but in a different way.
Different
in a different
style.
Way.
Yeah. I'm with you. Okay, just moving on to the Serie A, the table. I think in Italy, you're the only major league with an actual title race. You've got two teams who can still win the championship in the Scudetto. Napoli currently 2 points behind Juventus. Do you think Juventus will see this through eventually? Or do you think that Sarri and maybe his intense ways at Napoli may mean that Napoli towards the end get tired, fatigue, and they may run out of steam? How do you see the race going?
I think Napoli in this moment is a bit tired. They lose a bit of trust. After Roma match, they lose at home. I think it was an accident. I think Napoli and Juventus are the best teams for this season, and Napoli against little teams, I think they will win. In this moment, for example, Juventus had an accident with Spal. It was a draw. So I think it's an uncertain situation, and maybe I can say Juventus is favorite for now. But it depends on a big match in Juventus Napoli on 22nd and April. I think it's the point is there.
Okay, that's interesting. Now let's go to the Champions League now, Gabriele. The two teams, Italian teams left, Juventus and your team Roma, have the top two Spanish teams. Do you expect the Italian two the Italian teams to go out?
I think it's logical because Real Madrid and Barcelona are the best team in Europe now, in my opinion, with Manchester City maybe and I think the logical result is Italian teams go out. But I think maybe Juventus is 40-60 with against Real Madrid, and Roma I think 20-80.
I mean, how pleased are you with your team Roma's season so far this year? I mean, you're third in Serie A. You're not gonna, you know, you're not in the title race, but you know, you're looking good for third. You're in the quarterfinals now of the Champions League. You know, do you think that Roma could cause an upset and knock out Barcelona? How pleased are you with your team's season so far?
I think for now the season of AS Roma is good, because in Champions League AS Roma went very well, and I think it was unexpected. Because we think in Italy that the group in Champions League was very, very hard, and Roma won it. So I think the goal for AS Roma was is today the quarterfinals is okay, and the third position in Serie A, it's okay, because they have a lot of problem for 2 months, and 2 months is a period too long for a crisis. So I think it's okay. I think it's okay.
Okay, good season. And just finally, very briefly, Mohamed Salah is here at Liverpool, ripping it up, man. He's doing, I think he's on 36 goals at Liverpool now. You obviously had Salah at your club. Are you surprised seeing how well he's doing now? Or did you think when he was at Roma, you know, good player, but you didn't expect him to be this good?
I think Salah, it's a very, very good player. And in Roma, we saw because I think he's improving now. He's improving too. He's a very, very good player. But now I think Liverpool is a perfect team for him, for his way to play. I think I a bit surprised, yes, because in Rome when Salah played, we can see a very important player with a lot of talent, but it was not so complete. I mean, and now it's I think it's perfect, and I think it's perfect for Premier League. His way to play is I think perfect, and I was surprised in the past when Chelsea sold him. Sorry.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay. Just finally as well, you predicted very well the Milan Arsenal game. I was very surprised when you said that you had Arsenal as the favourites, but you were correct. So yeah, well done. Gabriele, we will get you back on in a couple of weeks, just before the Juventus Madrid Roma Barcelona game. We'll get you on the podcast just the week before that to get your predictions on those ties as well.
Okay.
So brilliant. Gabriele, grazie mille.
Okay, bye.
Thank you. Ciao.
Gabriele,
have a perfect...
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Janan.
Relegation zone, guys. Who do you want to go down?
Stoke.
Oh, wow. West Ham.
Jeez. Wow, wow.
West Ham.
Mike,
why? Let Mike go.
West Ham.
Why do you want West Ham to go down?
Without swearing or anything, it's just ridiculous how that club is run. It's a joke. It's a joke. And to be honest, I don't even like the fans either. No, bro. But, no, just how they run. I can't stand it. It's just stupid. Do you know what? As a club, have an idea of how you want to play. Have an idea of what you want to do. Bring in a manager that complements that. Don't just bring in a manager for this. What are you going to do with Moyes?
It does feel a bit random at West Ham, to be fair.
Yeah, what are you going to do with Moyes? Mm. Bilic, he seemed like he was trying to build something. He wasn't doing too well, but he wasn't necessarily doing ridiculously poor. Mm. He was doing bad, but I think he was at their level. Do you know what I mean? And I don't know, man. I just feel that club just stinks for me. There's something there that I just... Nah.
You're not having it.
Yeah, I hope they go down.
You shouted out Stoke Ranty before I even finished the question. Why do you want Stoke Ranty?
That was harsh, man.
I'll tell you why. Because Stoke were notoriously known for being the team that, you know, nobody wanted to play, especially
cold,
at the Britannia.
Day at Stoke, yeah.
Yeah, that's the term that everyone used to go by with Stoke. Now they don't have that hostility at the Britannia. They don't have the hostility even on the pitch. They have nothing. I mean, Shaqiri's a decent player. I like Shaqiri. But other than Shaqiri, what are they really offering? Berahino, his confidence is shot completely. Jesse Rodriguez has come from PSG?
Is he still there? Yeah. I thought he went. Did he go? Did not go back on loan or something?
I don't know. See, nobody even knows where he... I think the last time I saw him, he
against Arsenal. That was the last time I saw him.
He had an issue with Paul Lambert where he didn't... No, that was someone else. But yeah, basically, the reason I say Stoke, I don't feel they have any style of play. I watched them at Wembley play Spurs. They got turned over. I watched them at Stamford Bridge. I was reporting on that game as well. They
really?
Got turned over.
Oh, wow.
5-0. They got peppered 5-0. They literally just don't have anything going forward.
It's time for them to go.
So for me, it's time for them to go. West Ham again, and I co-sign what Michael said. There's just literally no... I don't want to be too rude, but I feel like that club has no culture whatsoever. Yeah, like literally, there's no structure to what they're doing whatsoever. You don't look at West Ham and see how you can like identify them. Like there's no identity at the club.
Mm.
It's almost as if they go by trial and error. Mm. Right, this isn't working. Let's bring someone else in. Mm. That isn't working. Let's bring someone else in. And I think with David Moyes, I mean, he is to an extent a proven Premier League manager. But I think he's had his good spell at West Ham, you know, when he had that decent performance against Man City. They drew against Spurs, etc. But I just feel like in the long run, there's no real ambition. What is their ambition in the next 5 years? Is it to be in Europe? Is it to stay in the Premier League? Is it to be in the top 10? Nobody, you know, you understand what I'm saying?
I do. They've got a massive game this weekend against Southampton. And I reckon if they don't win that...
they go down.
I think they could be in trouble. And West Ham were in my three to go down back in August, and everyone looked at me like left eye, like, "Well, really?" I tipped West Ham to go down in August,
yeah.
I think actually playing at home, the game's at the London Stadium. I think that a lot of those teams in the bottom five, bottom six, I think actually playing at home is actually a negative.
Yeah.
Do you know
definitely.
What I mean? I think
especially at this stage of the season.
Yeah. I think Southampton might win that, not because they're better than West Ham, but because they're away.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's actually at West Ham. Okay, so Ranty and Mike, thank you very much for coming on this week's pod. Just a shout out to everybody. Do not forget to subscribe to the pod via iTunes. We're on iTunes, we're on Audio Boom, we're also on Spotify. Just search us Football Fans Podcast. Give us a review, give us a like. It makes a big difference. And I'm going to take the opportunity to also forward you guys also to our sister pod, Football Fans Podcast, The Shootout, where this week we had Marcus Gale, who spoke about a variety of things, from Brentford Academy being shut down to his time with Jamaica and the Reggae Boys. And also a scrap he had with Vinnie Jones, where he basically boxed him and pumped him out in one punch. So if you want to hear more about that, check us out on Football Fans Podcast, The Shootout. Search it in Spotify and also iTunes as well. Gentlemen, cheers for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Time.
Thank you very much. Until next week, peace.